You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Jennifer Ashley Tepper with the Untold Stories of Broadway podcast. And today our guest is the great Anne L. Nathan. Anne and I spent the whole summer working together on the musical Broadway Bounty Hunter. And I also have just been a huge fan of hers forever for her shows, including Thoroughly Modern Millie, Ragtime, Chicago, Assassin, Sunday in the Park with George, Once It Should Have Been You. Chances are if you've seen a Broadway show in the past 10 years, you have seen Anne L. Nathan. And she's especially known for her role as Miss Flannery in Millie, which we are here to talk about today, along with the Marquee Theater. This is Jennifer Ashley Tepper on the Untold Stories of Broadway podcast, and I am here with a very exciting guest, Anne L. Nathan. Hi, Anne.
Oh, hi.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be sitting with you.
Me too, always.
Always. We just spent a lot of time together this summer working on Broadway Bounty Hunter at a tech table and in the theater together, so to sit with you at a podcast table is a familiar but new experience.
Although I want to say that I don't understand why there are no snacks here.
We can grab snacks.
I don't want snacks, but we did.
We were like covered in snacks different vibe. But so we're here to talk about the Marquee Theater and about Thoroughly Modern Millie, which of course you originated a role in, which was an incredibly formative and important show to me. And I'm just like, I still can't believe that we're friends. Honestly.
Also, what role did you play in high school?
Oh my God. So I copied your Tony performance, move for move, note for note, for Thespians. And it was probably like the best performance I ever gave just because I copied you. I watched everything you did. You can find it on YouTube, me tapping to forget about the boy. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah. So the Marquee, just to start us off, the Marquee Theater was built in 1986. And the interesting story about the Marquee, of course, is that the Marriott Marquee, when it was built, it knocked down 5 theaters that were there. So in what is known as the Great Theater Massacre of 1982, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, wow. I'm glad we're each going to teach each other things today. But so there were 5 theaters, the Marasco, the Bijou, that old Helen Hayes, the Gaiety, and the Astor, that in 1982, the city, you know, it was a very different New York City. Things were falling apart. Times Square was, you know, decrepit and not what it is now, certainly. And to re-energize the city in the same way that later on Disney would and Giuliani would and all of that, there was this idea to build this giant hotel in the middle of Times Square that would bring in tourists and bring a new business, but Times Square was such a wreck that they wanted to build the hotel facing away from Times Square, which is kind of the way the Marriott got built, how it did. And there were huge protests, and everyone from Christopher Reeve to Susan Sarandon chained themselves to, you know, bulldozers, Joe Papp making speeches on a bullhorn, you know, why are we getting rid of these 5 theaters? This will get to a wonderful place at some point, I promise. I love the Marquee. So essentially, though, it was birthed out of this, like, you know, sadness and all these protests for these historic theaters that were being knocked down. But because of that, we got the Marquee. There was a deal where, like, okay, if you're going to build this hotel and get rid of these theaters, there has to be a theater in the hotel. So it was originally intended to be like a hotel ballroom, became the Marquee Theater. And I always just think, you know, people were mad at the time, and now the Marquee is like this beloved house where so many important shows.
I mean, it's no Gaiety, which I'm pretty sure. Maybe I went to auditions there. I feel like that's a place that people...
Oh, so there was a rehearsal studio that people
like
went
when
to.
When I was like 19
Little.
Or something. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, those blocks were really different. So the Marquee, when it was built in 86, it opened officially its first real production was Me and My Girl, which is still the longest running production there. And the second production at the Marquee, I'm just obsessed with this, so, and you'll know exactly why, was Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge, which never came in, but the Marquee on the Marquee went up. And I became obsessed when I first moved to New York with shows where the Marquee went up and it didn't come in, because, like, how often does that happen?
That's crazy. I did not know. Like, again, you're stumping me.
Yeah, okay. So do you feel... I'm just like, I'm about to rattle off a list of like marquees that went up for shows that didn't come in. But no, I'm always just fascinated by that. So Annie 2 was technically the second show. But the first show I ever saw at the Marquee was Millie. Okay. So did you ever see a show at the Marquee before Millie?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I did. No, wait, was Annie Get Your Gun there?
Yes.
Yes, I saw Annie Get Your Gun. I think that's it, because I don't think I ever saw Dem Yankees. Mm-hmm. I think that was the show that I saw there. Cool. Yeah.
So tell me about, how did Millie start? How did you first get involved?
I did a reading, and what happened was I auditioned for Wise Guys. Was that what it's called? The Sondheim show?
Yes.
That I actually ended up doing Roadshow, which was Wise Guys. But back in the day, they did a production with Sam Mendes. And I auditioned. It was the first time I auditioned for Jim Carnahan, and I did not get it. And then I got a call probably 2 weeks later. I was in Ragtime at the time. And I remember my agent saying... don't you hate when people are like, my agent said, but I remember my agent, saying, so there's a show, Thoroughly Modern Millie. And, do you want to do the reading of it? And, you know, you'd be on the ensemble. And I remember going, that is so not my kind of show. What's bobbed hair and just like long legs in the '20s and flappers. But of course I was like, yeah, I'd love to do it. And I did the reading, and I remember while I was doing the reading, and I had a great time at that reading. It was a wonderful experience. But I remember out of the corner of my eye watching Ruth Williamson play Miss Flannery, and she was wonderful. But I remember thinking, I bet that it's going to be too small for her. She's not going to take that role. And I remember just sort of like, it was marinating, like, that I could do that role. And then I remember thinking, that could be a tap show. Wouldn't that be a tap number? I mean, I honestly feel like what do they call it when you bring it to you? What's that book?
You secreted it.
I secreted it. I did. So then many months later, we auditioned for La Jolla. I had a re-audition. And there was a big dance call, and I had a tap dance. And I found out a week later that I got... And I remember we called. We actually called and said, Anne is interested in auditioning for Miss Flannery. And they said... I think at the time they just said no. I don't know if it was that they thought I was too young, whatever it was. But then I got an offer a week later saying, you're going to be in the ensemble and play Miss Flannery. So that's what I did. When I was in La Jolla, I was dancing. Like, I mean, Rob Ashford would be like, can you go further back? No, further back, more to the left. Yeah, you're off stage. Good. You're good. I joke about that, but really I was with Joanne Hunters, like the people who could really dance and do like three turns. And I was like one. And then I had to go down on the floor. I remember it was just so hard. But I played this Miss Flannery, and then Equity came and saw the show, and they determined that I was a principal. Thank you. And so I didn't have to do all the dancing that was not in my wheelhouse. And then the story goes on. So that's what happened. It was a bit of kismet.
Yeah. What was the show like out of town? Like, were there parts that were different that you remember?
Songs were different. So it was a very exciting time. I still remember. I remember the first time we heard Gimme Gimme. I remember the turntable broke. And instead, it was the opening night, the first preview, I think. First preview. The turntable had broken quite a bit. And we determined that we'd sit and read it. And I was the narrator and Miss Flannery. And we read the piece. And then we got up and did Forget About the Boy. We did like two or three numbers. And we never heard Gimme Gimme before. And it was just amazing. That's the kind of stuff that I mean, Janine and Dick really worked hard out of town. They changed a lot. They changed a lot of scenes. They changed songs. So it kept changing. And then the leading lady changed. So a lot changed there.
Yeah. What do you remember about moving into the Marquee, and what was your dressing room like, and what was that?
Well, the first thing I remember is, looking back on it, it makes me laugh. Now, we had such faith in the show that we all painted. That just doesn't happen. I've never been in a show, except unless you're lucky enough to have someone who designs your dressing room, you don't paint till the reviews come in. And we were like, red paint. We all went to the paint store. We were all painting our rooms during tech. That's what we did. I had an amazing dressing room because there were these windows that faced out into the lobby, and they hadn't put up the posters yet. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved in, is that okay? I just moved it. When I first moved in, you could see people in the lobby into your shower. Like, the bathroom and shower had total glass. you can wave to people in the
so they forgot to include dressing rooms when they built the theater when they were like, oh yeah, we have to put a theater in this hotel. It was a ballroom. So those were supposed to be shops, and so they like weren't exactly built to be dressing rooms. I think it's all different now though.
But I think that it is all different now, but I'm pretty sure they could see me. Like, I think we actually like Gavin would go out and go, hi, like,
oh,
we'd, because we couldn't believe that the shower was there, right. And I had to wait till they had poster board or whatever was up there.
Shower.
But I remember thinking, I remember that people said that people who work in that theater are always happy because there's so much space.
Yeah.
And I think that that is true. There were so many dressing rooms, mm-hmm. and there's so many floors of dressing rooms that it was a very happy company. And mm-hmm. I've talked to other people in other shows there, and they say that it's notoriously a happy place because you have space.
Right. I've heard that a lot. I've heard, you know, it's the only one with a soda machine. It's the only one with a green room. So you were the very first interview I ever did for my book series in 2013 at the Edison
at
Cafe.
The Edison, yes.
R.I.P. Edison. And that is something I have always treasured because I really didn't know what I was doing yet. And you just kind of let me ramble, and we had a great time, and we ate Edison food, and it was fantastic. But one of the things you said to me that you were the first of a couple people to say was you have to interview Ray, the doorman, because he's like the heart of the marquee. And the way that this happened is crazy to me because I was like, oh, I have to interview him. I couldn't find his contact info. And finally I was like, oh, I'm just going to drop a note off at the marquee. And I like tweeted and was like, does anyone have his contact info? If not, I'm going to drop a note off. And you were like, call me, because you had gotten his contact info for me and found out that it was his last day because like something was closing and there wasn't another show coming in. So I like ran there and I was like, and Nathan gave me your info, told me it's your last day. And he was like, yeah, pull up a seat, interview me. And if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't have interviewed him because there wasn't another show in. And he became kind of like the narrator of that chapter. Like,
I mean, he's fascinating.
He is the marquee.
And the sweetest, most open, like just a remarkable person.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot and make you read a Ray story from the marquee.
I can't wait. Okay.
So it's actually the opening of the chapter.
Okay. I was born in Puerto Rico. I moved to New York in 1972. In the 1980s, I was working as a private security guarding the Marquee Theater. On the last day of my contract, the doorman left for a new job, and I got to take over. I was blessed. That was 25 years ago, and I've been at the Marquee Theater ever since. The first Broadway show I ever saw was the first one I worked on. I worked for, Me and My Girl, 1986. Great show! Exclamation point. It made me a fan of musical comedies. At the Marquee, we've had some great shows. We had Shogun, Victor Victoria. Oh, I saw Victor Victoria,
okay,
by the way.
Okay, there you go.
And Thoroughly Modern Millie, which I loved. We had The Woman in White and The Drowsy Chaperone. I've seen all these shows. What am I talking about? I've seen everything at the Marquee, which was awesome. And recently we had Evita and Jekyll and Hyde. Those were good shows. Oh, those were only good shows. The other were great shows. I'm just saying that's what he said.
Yeah.
During Shogun, they did a salt ceremony. All of the stagehands and everyone on the house staff thought that the salt ceremony jinxed the theater. The shows right after that weren't very good. And on Come Fly Away, Twyla Tharp did an earth ceremony to bless the show. One time they rented out the theater for an event, and Bob Hope came into the Marquee. He had a tradition of making the first person that he saw laugh. That's how he knew that he was going to have a good time on the stage. He saw me first at the door, and he had me laughing until he got all the way up to the top of the stairs. He was pleased. But it's so nice to meet everybody. To me, everybody's important, including yourself.
I just was
oh
like,
my goodness.
I know I put that in. I was just like, this
that
shows,
is so
that's
sweet.
Who he is.
I know. Shall I go on?
Go on.
Bernadette Peters has done 3 shows here. I love that lady. And during Follies, she and Jan Maxwell were both here together. Jan Maxwell is an incredible woman, too. Oh, that number she did, Lucy and Jesse, I saw that number 40 times.
Lucky him.
Wow. Jan was actually a bit of a practical jokester. One time, the night doorman, Cisco, accidentally cut someone on the knee with a knife, and Jan came down and gave him a safety kit and some plastic knives. During the Goodbye Girl, Carol Woods and Scott Wise used to love fighting with water guns. You had to walk around with an umbrella. My routine is usually that I walk into the theater and open it up. If it's a non-matinee day, I bring my PlayStation or my Xbox and I play games. I work out. Once the show is in production, you can have a routine and do these things. As a doorman, sometimes you see a show that isn't perfect, but you always see everything come together little by little. You see the hard work these actors do and how much time the writers spend here. And because of that, every single opening is special. For Annie Get Your Gun and Damn Yankees and opening night, the whole staircase was covered in flowers. With Ricky Martin and Evita, the audiences were crazy. We had one guy who was drunk and started screaming that Ricky was gay during a performance. There was a young lady who decided to jump on stage and go after him and grab him. And at our stage door, there was hair pulling and pushing and shoving because they wanted to see Ricky. It reminded me of one time during The Cape Man when a young lady wanted to bite Mark Anthony's neck. But on the flip side, sometimes the stage door is great. There was this one person that made me laugh so much. Reba McEntire came out the stage door after Annie Get Your Gun, and he yelled out with a nice southern accent, "Reba, we named our horse after you." During Me and My Girl, my first Broadway show, Jim Dale had a sword play sequence. One day he threw up his sword and One day he threw up his sword and missed, and the sword ended up in the pit. A little old lady came running up. She was very short, maybe 4'9", and real slowly and gently she said, "Are you all right down there?" The mic picked it up. It made the whole audience explode with laughter, and thank God everybody was all right. Wow, that's so beautiful.
He just was...
He has such joy.
That's like, interviewing him, I really felt like I was interviewing the Marquee Theater. Yeah. I know that sounds like he's just...
No, he has such interesting stories.
And when they were doing the renovation on the Marquee, I walked by the Neil Simon one day, and I saw him, and I was like, oh, right, but I was so, like, perplexed to see him somewhere else. I was like, that's so weird.
That's so sweet.
So I got to interview him because of you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One of the things he showed me that I thought was crazy, going back to you saw Victor Victoria, I'm jealous. He showed me, and they still had it, this was just a couple years ago, Julie Andrews, you know, obviously famously declined her Tony nomination. Victor Victoria was not nominated for Best Musical. She was the only nominee for Best Actress. And so she said, I choose to stand with the overlooked in my company. And so the stagehands built her a giant Tony Award that said, like, this is your Tony Award. And it, like, was still at the Marquee when I interviewed Ray in 2013.
That's amazing. I don't remember that, but that's so cool.
So, but you got to see that show and you saw a few others that played the Marquee.
Yes, because Adam Heller, my dear friend, was in that show. And yes, it's funny. You forget what you see until you actually see it on paper and they go, oh, I've seen that.
Totally, all of those. So what were the traditions at Millie? Was there anything that happened backstage that was like an every week thing or any like memories about doing traditions backstage?
Well, I know my personal thing, because I am superstitious, is I had the greatest crew is at that theater, and they built me a tap tile that I had in my room, and every day before I went on stage I had to go through all my tap stuff just because I was scared that I had this ridiculous tap tile in my room. We had I don't know that we had rituals. I mean, we had very nice producers on Millie. They brought us bagels every week. Mm-hmm. We had a TV that was bought for us in the green room, so we'd have a comfy place to hang out. But I don't remember specifically rituals. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I can't help you with that one.
Oh, good. Was there any like other show on the block that you remember interacting with? Like, what were the shows at the time, or were there specific hangouts that the Millie cast had?
Producers was down the block, I'm pretty sure. I'm right about that. Yeah, we used to go to Angus sometimes.
R.I.P. Angus. That's so weird that that's gone.
It is so weird. Yeah. I think that was the place that we went to the most. I'm trying to think where else we hung out. Because I did do a fair amount of hanging out because it was not a difficult role.
Right.
you know, Sutton was going home and like being very disciplined. But most of us, I think, had a good time. And it was also such a light, fun show that we were always in a good mood and we always wanted to celebrate, especially because it also came after 6 months after 9/11. So it was really, really important show at the time because people, I think, wanted to see something that lifted their spirits and made them laugh.
Totally. I feel like that is such a part of the Millie story. Like, people really remember seeing it after 9/11, just exactly as you said. Was there a sense of that with the audiences at all? Like, did you talk to people that were like, thank you for...
I still remember Donna Lynn Chaplin coming, and at the time, we didn't know each other, and she sent us a letter after saying that it just transformed her because she was so down to see that kind of show really... I think that we were all very nervous. I can speak for many of us that we were nervous. We didn't know what would happen because it was such a scary time in the city. Mm-hmm. for numerous reasons, but especially with this business, what was going to happen, what was going to sell, will people go back to the theater? So we were very lucky that it just kind of worked out. And also it worked out because we had producers that supported the piece. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, an amazing thing.
When did you feel like you knew that it was going to be a hit?
I don't know I felt like it was a slow burn. Did I always have faith in it? Yes. Did I always find it incredibly entertaining and funny and charming and love the music, all of that? Yes. But I think it was one of those that just kept picking up speed, kind of, and then the Tonys happened and that really changed things. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's a little more like that. And also, this was a show, maybe more than any other, that really changed in previews. Mm-hmm. From the first preview to opening night, there were so many different things. So they could just continue to work on it and streamline it, mm-hmm. for sure.
I know that you mentioned, so Casey Nicholaw was in the ensemble, which is, you know, obviously he's gone on to do a lot of things as a director, choreographer. There were so many people in that cast that had...
Incredible.
How wild. And you were telling me something this summer about just, like, people who were in the cast but watching the changes and, like, observing them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just found a tape that Casey gave us for opening night, which was basically just a lot of funny things about rehearsal. And one of the things he taped was... an announcement saying, heads up, there's a new scene for Miss Flannery tonight. And then the next day, heads up, it's canceled. Because it was so sweet. They were trying to write something to kind of wrap up my story. And I'm going to be honest, I just did it very poorly. I wasn't very good with the last minute at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I elevated it at all. And very quickly it was cut. I remember getting home from that night and writing Dick and saying, can it go away? And he was like, don't worry, it's going away. Yeah. But it wasn't him. It was actually, I just couldn't figure out how to play it so quickly.
Yeah. It's so funny you reminded me of this, but when I saw Drowsy Chaperone at that theater, you know, I won the lottery. I sat in the front row and underneath my seat, I ruined the story. I put my playbill down and there was a script down there and it was somebody's preview script with like cross outs and changes. And I tried to find an usher who just like didn't know what I was talking about. So I'm sorry to say I took it home. I must still have it somewhere. Someone's Drowsy Chaperone preview script. But it's amazing to me that, you know, I think if you're in the theater, you know, but if you're not, it's like when things are changing every night, you're still doing the show on Broadway. It's just a phenomenon that doesn't exist in any other industry.
And big hats off to Sutton, because I have to say that she was brilliant at it. She really could get something last minute, get off book, be brilliant at it, go on stage. I mean, she really was like a machine that way and didn't seem stressed about it.
It's so, you and I were talking about this also earlier, but it's the show became this like beacon of light for so many people of like a certain theater generation that like so many of us who were in high school at the time and came to see it. It felt like it was like about us. It's this girl that moves to the city like that in Sutton specifically. And you said you've had experiences now with colleagues being like, I saw that show. It changed my life.
Yeah. It's really amazing. Especially when I have students now, I teach and they're all doing it in high school. But when they, I recently I was Skyping with a student and I asked her to sing anything for me so I could hear her sing. And she said, well, I'll sing Forget About the Boy. And I usually keep quiet, but I just went, oh yeah, I was in that. I just kind of like, and she went, oh, really? And I said, yeah, I was in the Broadway production. And I could see like her get a little like, wait, what? And I said, I played, you know, Miss Flannery, the tap dancing. And I mean, she practically had a heart attack.
Yeah, she
It was really cute. It was really sweet.
I interviewed, there was so many, it was Laura Osnes and Jay Johnson and Jonathan Groff, who all were like, that show made me want to move to New York.
That's like Elizabeth Davis, I tell you.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I have to ask, so the Marquee has a unique fire system, which is because it was built in 86, it has like a flood curtain. And I was hearing about, there was like a flood during Millie.
There was a flood. I also remember during Tech, there was a water thing on stage, like the... I don't know what happened, like a fire alarm, something happened, but that happened too. There was water all over the stage. I remember that because Don Holder told me, came out wet, like soaking wet. So there was, but yes, I remember vaguely. I don't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. I think a show got canceled.
Yeah, it happened during Millie and during Evita, where I think during Millie some rehearsals got canceled. But what it does is, you know, as opposed to a traditional fire curtain, it sends down like a deluge of water from the roof. So it essentially fills the orchestra pit. And I do remember when I interviewed Hal Luftig and he was talking about during Evita, the music supervisor hopped into the pit when the flood came down to try to save instruments, not realizing there were like live wires in there. And I'm like, this does not seem safer than a traditional fire curtain. Oh my gosh. But it's interesting. The Marquee just, it's different than those old Broadway theaters. It has different elements.
I loved that theater. Yeah. I mean, I have to say that maybe it's because I loved that show and there was something so special about it to me, but I loved being there. I loved the cast there. We just, the space there and the amazing doorman, the crew. It was a very special place to work.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's raked. Like, the audience, it's like, there's not a bad seat at the Marquee. Like, it was built in that way. I did love also during Drowsy Chaperone, they mentioned the Marasco. I just remembered that. They, like, talk about the theaters that had been knocked down, which it's so interesting because, like, to our generation, it's like, it's the Marquee. It's where Millie was.
Right.
And to some people, it might be like, oh, they knocked down those theaters. But, you know, the Beaumont was built on top of the area that was once, like, you know, where West Side Story happened. And I remember reading about how when the St. James was first built, which was many, many years ago, actors protested it because the original Sardi's was where the St. James was.
Really?
And so they moved Sardi's. So it's like New York is just built on top of itself.
Also, change is hard, and sometimes it's bad, and sometimes, I mean, people used to smoke in restaurants.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to adjust until they see that it works out and go, oh, wow, this actually is something that is helping the community.
Totally. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Untold Stories of Broadway podcast with this week's guest, Annelle Nathan. Stay tuned for part two of this week's episode featuring the Marquee Theater. Thank you to our producer, Dori Berenstein, my publishers of the Untold Stories of Broadway, Brisa Trinquero and Roberta Pereira, Zach Zadek for that theme music. And thank you to all of you for listening to the podcast. You can buy the Untold Stories in book version on Amazon.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.